Well, hello again, everybody out there in Turdville. It is Thursday, and gosh, you've been hanging around TF Metals Report very long. You know that Thursdays are our days for our online webinars, the critically acclaimed series we call Access to Access. Critically acclaimed by me, of course. This week's guest is someone that I've been fortunate to consider a friend now for a number of years. And gosh, he's a friend to everybody that follows the metals. It's Andy Hoffman. And Andy has been a been a metals analyst and blogger for a number of years, was a Wall Street analyst for a number of years before that, and is currently the marketing director at Miles Franklin, which is a firm that we affiliate with here at TF Metals Report. Absolutely love them for all your metals buying and storage needs. You go to Miles Franklin, let them know Turd sent you, and get any kind of metal that you need. And like I said, store it as well. So it's fun to partner with them, and it's great to count Andy as a friend. So Andy, thank you very much for joining us. We very much appreciate you spending some time here in Turdville.
Well, it's a pleasure. And again, I appreciate your site too and what you're doing. There's only really a handful out there that I think are cutting edge and, you know, getting the truth out there, and yours is one of them.
I appreciate that. We do tend to kind of see things the same way, that's for sure. I was just reading a great post that you put up last week, and I'm going to link it into this podcast page. I think you called it the Metals Manipulation Primer, right?
Yes.
Something like that. And it was just kind of a reminder. And I think everybody needs a reminder every once in a while, because people kind of come and go from the space and they get frustrated and they go away for a while. Then there's people that are just kind of waking up for the first time and recognizing that things are amiss and they're looking for answers. And so your article last week was great. And it was talking about how you initially got that name Ranting Andy from Bill Murphy. And tell everybody, just to kind of give everybody, if you, folks that aren't familiar with you and the work you do, maybe kind of let's start there and kind of summarize how you came to where you are and the observations that you make every day.
Right. Well, again, and you know, the fact that I put that manipulation primer out last week is because, look, I mean, people who know me, and I'll explain people who don't, for people who don't in a second, people know that I started, you know, by writing on GATA back in now 2002 or three. When I got into the sector, it's been a long time. Last particular, and manipulation of gold, which I started out learning from GATA, and I've, you know, taken it to a new level on my own with all the research I've done over the years, to the point where I've documented pretty much everything that goes on, from the 2:15 a.m. attack at the open of the London pre-market, the 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time open or close of the global markets at the p.m. fix, what I call the 12 o'clock p.m. cap of last resort, the open of the comics, et cetera. I mean, I watched all these things. And, you know, this particular week, last week, because just gold and silver, paper gold and silver have absolutely just been annihilated for years by the cartel. And, you know, now we're seeing record demand. This year we've seen silver shortages. The money printing is off the charts. And, you know, so what we've seen is the prices have started to move up this summer, especially when the stock markets were weaker earlier in the fall. And just as gold and silver got right up to their 200-day moving averages about a week or two ago, and gold it's about 1176, and silver it's 1595. I've seen just off the charts, absolutely off the charts, nonstop attacking of the prices to keep them from going over. And yesterday was the perfect example. In fact, they were both well over them right before the FOMC statement, and you know, then the statement comes out which said absolutely, utterly nothing. Yep. And since then, they've just brutally attacked. You know, this morning, most of the attacks came after a slew of massively gold bullish numbers, the bad GDP report, pending home sales, consumer confidence, you name it. So again, I figured, you know, let me put out something that people can go back and see the history of all the things that I've written, all the things that GATA have written, just so they understand what's going on. And again, the reason that I spend so much time doing it is for the same thing, the same reason that GATA and let's say a Sinclair or Richard Russell did for me way back when I was new to the space. It empowered me. It empowered me to understand that the things that I was watching were not real, that the forces of supply and demand, economic Mother Nature as I call it, cannot be usurped, and they are not being usurped. But right now, they are trying to. But again, what you see in the precious metals world is not real. The only thing that's real is the physical market, which is why you're having shortages of silver this year and premium surging And you know, so take heart, people. If you're seeing, you know, a day like today is a particularly frustrating day because it's so obvious that this was just, yeah, they knew the Fed was speaking, so they used it as an excuse to attack. All this is going to do is just going to cause supply to fall further and demand to increase further until inevitably they lose completely.
You know, and we've been talking about that on the site. You mentioned the 200-day moving average. It's been 3 weeks. If you could plot a daily chart of silver, 3 weeks that silver has been capped aggressively at its 200-day moving average. And we've watched, you know, you can't put too much stock in anything generated by the criminally complicit CFTC. But I think it's worth monitoring from a historical point of view, just the overall changes of the report. I don't get into the specifics. I don't know if it's that useful, but just, you'll like this, Andy, as we watch that capping, what they call that commercial category on that report has had a net position change over 3 weeks of 56,000 contracts short. At 5,000 ounces of contracts, that's almost 300 million ounces of paper silver that they net shorted in 3 weeks that they don't have. You know, it's not like, you know, all these miners suddenly showed up and dumped their next couple years worth of supply, right?
Most of it occurs in, you know, 30-second or 2-minute intervals at the same times of day every day with the same algorithms. But again, you know, on that matter, look, you know, people want to use my experience in the sector, and they, you know, they see stuff like the COT report. Like you said, it's you know, the last month or two, really, it's been since that big July 19th, what I call the Sunday night paper massacre. You know, they took gold down. It was $52 in 1 minute.
Yep.
And that's when the supply shortages started right after that. That's immediately when Miles Franklin's business went from being kind of dead to having the best quarter that we've had probably ever. And most of it silver, by the way, directly after that. That's what happens when they do that. But the fact is, you know, since that time, you've seen, as you said, the COT reports show massive increases in the commercial shorts. And, you know, they're not, by the way, everyone knows, they're not commercials. They're the cartel. It's banks.
Right.
It's JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, these guys that are working with the government and for the government, you know, to keep the price down. There's nothing more to it. But I will say that that report, the COT report, back in the day, let's call it 2002 to pick a number, 2009, something like that, 10.
Yeah.
When you saw that report and you saw that they were shorting, let's say for 2 or 3 weeks in a row, guaranteed it meant that prices were going down, just like if they were buying, it meant guaranteed they were going up. So when that report came out on Friday afternoon at 3:30 Eastern time and it showed like for a week or two big shorts, I would be terrified knowing what was coming the next couple of days because it was guaranteed, and vice versa if they were buying. But, you know, I wrote an article, you can Google it at Miles Franklin, COTs no longer matter. I wrote it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And it's true. That report doesn't mean anything. Like you've seen, you know, the big shorting the last few weeks, and the price has surged. You know, for one, the CFTC, as you know, it's been 2 years now since they stuck that waiver in every day that says this data is for informational purposes. We can't guarantee it's true. And two, they lie anyway, so it wouldn't matter if they had a waiver or not. And three, as I said, it really doesn't matter. I mean, and basically they've been in a trading range, the commercials, shorts, for a long, long time. If anything, it's been trending down, the short positions. And in fact, twice earlier this year, they almost went positive. And of course, they didn't. They turned around and went negative. So I don't get too worried about it. I follow it just out of curiosity, just to see if something changes that piques my interest. But I don't get too worried about it. But as you say, whatever they're writing, whether they're writing it or not, they're doing it. I mean, all you have to do is watch every single day what goes on at the same times of day to know. And the same thing goes for stock markets. I mean, look, we know the PPT is there every day. They have the same footprints too. Now the Chinese have the same footprints as the Fed. They do the exact same thing. Today we learned that the Bank of Japan, now owns 52% of all the ETFs in Japan. In fact, the biggest stock ETF in the world is the double long Nikkei ETF. I forgot what it's called. And now they've stopped taking orders for it, buy or sell, because the Bank of Japan has swamped that security. To the point where it's like, why even bother trying to pretend that the stock market today is down 24 points? It's not that. It's where they have it pegged. The difference between the stock market and the gold and silver market, of course, is that there's physical underneath the gold and silver market, which they can't change the supply of.
Well, I want to, let me jump in for a second, because that was going to be my first question for you of my questions. And I've only got two, but I knew that was one I wanted to ask you about, because I saw that too. And I mean, at some point we crossed the Rubicon to thinking somehow that was okay for central. I mean, Swiss National Bank owns how many billion dollars worth of Apple? I mean, at some point we went from central bankers, you know, in this kind of business of, you know, whatever, maintaining some level of interest rates just simply to benefit the banks, you know, trying to control money supply a little bit, to now outright purchases of not only debt, but equity. And so that was going to be my first question. So I want you to pick back up from there. What's wrong? Just in the end, what's wrong with it, Andy? Why can't they? I think this is wonderful. They could just simply just keep printing more and more yen, and just keep printing, right, buying more and more stocks, and just driving their stock market higher and higher. Why won't that work out just fine, Andy?
Right. And of course, the only difference between the Fed and the other banks, like say the Swiss bank, is that the Fed does a lot of this stuff covertly.
Right.
In Japan's case, the situation is so helpless, so hopeless with their demographic situation, their debt, although our debt to GDP, if you calculate it correctly, probably is not much different than Japan's. But, you know, the way that they calculate it and their demographics and all the things going on there, they feel the need to do that. And still the stock market in Japan is down 50% from its high from 1989, even with them buying up everything in sight. And by the way, they bought up all the bonds in sight to the point where they can no longer find bonds to buy. And, you know, at least with bonds, they mature and you can issue new ones to monetize. But what happens with stocks? What if they own the whole stock market? Is it a good thing? Well, of course, it's not a good thing, because they have to eventually, someone has to sell it. There's going to have to be some selling at some point. Where they're going to invent companies, print money and capitalize them so that they could print more money and buy the stocks and take them higher. So, no, I mean, and everyone obviously realized it, especially when they're telling everyone. And, you know, the difference between them and the Fed, the other difference is that the Fed only acts based on what the stock market does. Like yesterday's report, and everyone should listen to my audio blog, which will be out later today, about it. You know, they took out, remember a month ago, the Fed in their statement, they put in a statement that says, it was new to their word cloud, that little word cloud, and it says, because of international developments, there may be a weakness in inflation over the near term that will cause us, you know, to be worried about the economy or something like that. That was a month ago, okay? Since then, commodity prices have fallen, economic data have fallen, everything has been bad, except the PPT has engineered this big turnaround in the stock market. So what did they do yesterday? They took that out. I mean, all that they said in that was that they worried about some very terrible things happening. Those very terrible things have indeed happened. But now they're not worried about them anymore because the stock market's higher. And presumably it's because of their printing money and buying the stock market. So again, you know, it's kind of like this, the ultimate Ponzi scheme. We know that retail participation, probably in Japan as well, and certainly here, is as low as it's been in years. The hedge funds are losing money despite the market going up because they're too dumb to realize that you can't make money owning Tesla and GoPro. You have to actually just own the stock futures or the ETFs that the central banks are buying, et cetera. So again, you know, it's a Ponzi scheme. Less and less people even care about the stock market anymore. The Wall Street capital raising business is dying. That's why Deutsche Bank is laying off 35,000 people, et cetera. And all these things add up to economic Mother Nature winning the war, and eventually she'll win decisively. And it won't matter how much money they print. All they can create at that point will be hyperinflation.
Yep. And that augurs, again, to the main mission of what you do, what I do, what Miles Franklin does, just a steady accumulation of that physical metal as your protection against it. Who can say that it's going to fail next week or, you know, next month or 2016? But these policies are eventually they're doomed. And again, Mother Nature will reassert herself. Let me give you one.
And keep in mind, right, that there's 7.5 billion people in the world, but only 300 million live in America. And the dollar, look, for all my talk about it, I've said for years the dollar is going down. I never said it was going down against other currencies, just it's going to lose purchasing power. And in fact, 2 years ago, you can read my predictions from December 2013, I said the dollar is going to soar against other currencies as this crisis, this economic crisis, expands, particularly the commodity currencies. Because these currencies, you know, when they print money, they really cause inflation. They don't have the power of the printing press that the reserve currency has. We've been able to print more money, to print the same amount of money proportionally without destroying our currency proportionally. But they haven't, which is why the price of gold, for instance, in the average currency is at or near its all-time high. And I think people would be shocked if they realized how many, you know, let's call them first world countries, the price of gold is doing very well. I mean, Japan is at an all-time high. Australia is almost at an all-time high. South Africa is at an all-time high. Brazil, Russia, I mean, a lot. India is only 20% from an all-time high. Even the euro, I think it's only about 25% from its all-time high. So if you are Canada, I mean, if you're a Canadian, and obviously there's a lot of Canadians that listen to this, you know, you're thinking, well, you know, gold's only 15% from its all-time high. I mean, what's the big deal? I'm doing really well. You know, but here in America, I would be thrilled if it was only 15%, because that would mean it would be like $1,700, $1,800. So the average person has been being protected from their currency's loss of purchasing power. It's really only been here where a very small percentage of people, unfortunately us, have had to deal with this gold cartel where it's been an issue. And ultimately, we'll win too in this horrible game. But right now, it's been, you know, the rest of the world that's been winning.
Then use it to your advantage. That's all we can do. We've been preaching that now for a couple of years, and we'll continue to do it. Let me segue, Andy, to my second question, but also dovetails into the first question that was emailed to me. And it has to do with the miners. You've been a vocal, what's the right, not proponent, but opponent of owning mining shares for years. No, I mean, and been dead spot on as we've watched the HUI collapse from 600 down to 400 down to 105 just a couple of weeks ago. What do you make, though, of some of these companies like Newmont? Apparently had some good earnings here recently. I mean, is there a point where you might consider picking up a few shares? And if that's the case, and if the answer is no, we'll leave it there. But if that's the case, what would you look for in a miner?
We'll put it this way. Goldcorp is the fifth largest gold miner in the world, and it's known for having low-cost mines, right?
Right.
Well, it reported earnings today, and even after its adjustments for the, you know, one time, it was at a loss. And they are one of the low-cost producers, and the stock is down 10%. It's almost at an all-time low. And the average big-cap stock, forget the juniors, most of the juniors are bankrupt already, and the ones that are around are probably down 95%. But the average senior miner is down probably 85 to 90%. You know, across the board, no one's making any money, and they're, you know, as, you know, the thing that, look, I'll back up a second. The reason that I've been the way I've been, and again, I'm not a financial advisor, and people that get mad and say, well, you said sell them. No, all I've said is that I've spent a lifetime in these from 2002 until 2009 or 2008. My entire portfolio was junior miners. I only started selling them then and buying physical, and it wasn't until 2011 where I sold my last share. And since then, I've been 100% physical. So I know the miners as far as investing them. I also worked in the mining industry. I left Wall Street in 05, and from 06 to 2000, to the end of 2010, actually till the middle of 2011, I worked in the mining industry for dozens of companies. I worked as an officer, as a consultant, to dozens of junior miners. I met all the financiers, went to the conferences, traveled around the world to see mines, wrote about them, all that stuff. So I have as unique of an insight into the industry and its issues as anybody, and certainly the trading that goes on, the naked shorting that has destroyed it, I mean, completely destroyed it permanently. So I've just said all along, look, I'm in the business personally of protecting myself, and now I'm actually in the business of protecting others. So I tell them, look, mining shares are speculations. You can buy them or sell them. I really don't care. But I'm telling you, they couldn't be more risky. There's no sector on the planet that's more risky. And I said it 4 years ago as loudly as I could, because not only is it the most difficult business in the world, but when you have the cartel smashing the prices down all the time, making it even more difficult, and the fact that because it's real money, you have to deal with the fact that there's a lot of governments that think it's a national security interest. They want these huge royalties, windfall taxes. They want huge pieces of the mine. If the slightest thing goes wrong with their currency, they nationalize. All these things, and the environmentalists are around now, and the legal costs, and the cyanide. I mean, it's just an unbelievably bad business. And when you have someone, when you're doing a bad business and there's snipers shooting at you all day long, and, you know, I mean that both literally and figuratively,
yeah.
It's just a very difficult speculation. So, and the other thing is when people go, oh, yeah, but they're a proxy on gold and silver, so if gold goes up, they're going to go up. Well, first of all, the junior miners peaked in 2007, and the senior miners peaked in 2011. And when they have had times when they've gone up, they haven't gone up with them, partly because of naked shorting, and partly because like if gold goes, let's say, from 1150 now to 1200, that doesn't change the economics of their business. That doesn't change the fact that there's no capital availability for this sector, that all the mining engineers and geologists left the business decades ago. They've never come back. That the environmentalists are worse than ever. The governments are worse than ever. The naked shorting is worse than ever. As the money printing gets crazier, the cartel gets more vicious. So, you know, and now, of course, their balance sheets are worse than ever. Their reserves are way overvalued. They keep writing them down. And remember, you know, with prices this low, way below the cost of production, we're going to have some massive write-offs come the end of this year if prices don't explode in the next 3 months. So, you know, it's a ticking time bomb. And, yeah, I mean, if let's say the cartel, quote, breaks in the next 2 months and the end of the year gold is $1,400, $1,500, okay, they won't have write-offs. But probably if the, quote, cartel breaks, it means some other really bad things have happened at the same time, like a loss of control of monetary policy, of financial markets, and if, God forbid, gold and silver become remonetized in the eyes of the world, as they are in a lot of places now, but I'm talking about everybody, then everyone's going to want it. There's going to be shortages. The governments are going to do those. They're going to nationalize mines and windfall tax and all that stuff, and that won't be good for mining shares. So, again, there's so many risks involved. So all I could say is if you're looking to, quote, make money, well, you can buy mining shares. Good luck to you. Maybe you will, but you might lose everything. But if you simply buy gold and silver physical and hold it, they can never take that away from you.
Yep. I got to tell you, I'm going to make sure everybody listens to that last 5 minutes because I've never heard you state it better, Andy. That's just succinct and to the point. And for everybody that's out there trying to, you know, cherry pick and think, oh, hey, this one's only $1.50. This might, you know, it can only go down $1.50 from there, right?
Yeah. And by the way, you know, another Confucius say from the stock market business, stocks that are penny stocks are there for a reason. I would say if they did a study of stocks under a buck, which is probably 99% of the mining stocks right now, I'll bet you 99% of them historically have failed. Doesn't matter what sector. Well, it's gold. The gold's going to go up. I'm telling you, if there was a study, I bet you 99% of all stocks that have traded under a dollar throughout history have failed.
Well, I tell you what, we are already 20 minutes into this. I better keep on moving with the questions. And this is where they start kind of jumping around and going rapid fire. This is where everybody that's listening, this is your opportunity to ask Andy whatever is on your mind that you've been dying to ask him. On your GoToWebinar control panel, you hit the questions tab and type it in, and I will relay it to him. First one, though, comes from a guy by the name of Hindsight. And this gets back to, I guess he's getting at the safety and even confiscation issue. I know Miles Franklin does storage. Do you have any opinion on storage in Canada versus storage, say, in the Caymans from a, you know, offshore type storage in terms of safety from confiscation or just safety in general?
Well, I certainly do, especially because Miles Franklin's principal storage facility is in Montreal, and it's where I keep my metal, and I've been there many times. And look, I mean, I'm the kind of person who is as paranoid, as you can imagine, as anybody. And until I was at Miles Franklin and become, you know, I became a real public figure regarding saying I own gold and silver, I would say to almost anyone, keep it at home. I mean, for me, it makes sense to not have it at home for that very reason. But the fact is, almost any place I put my gold and silver, I don't really trust it exists because I'll get a piece of paper that says you own it, but I've never seen it. Right. And if it happens to be unallocated or unsegregated, then in my mind, you really don't own it, especially if it's unsegregated, because it really, they just say, yeah, we got some gold here and some of it's yours. So don't worry about it. It's kind of like the MF Global thing. You know, there's a right. pool of stuff and you know, you supposedly have some and you don't even know if they even have it. So, and then when you talk about sending it overseas, like Singapore or Switzerland, I mean, to me, it's halfway around the world, never even going to see it. Plus the fees of shipping it and storing it are exorbitant in a lot of these places. So you're going to pay a pretty penny. And by the way, except for our facility in Canada, is the only one we know of which charges by the ounce, not by the percentage value. So let's say gold triples in value. Almost everywhere you go, your storage fees are going to triple. And, you know, it adds up.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, what do I think about Canada versus the Caymans? First of all, I didn't really know you could do anything in the Caymans. It's not really a big, they don't have big vaults. I mean, you probably could keep a little in your bank. But, you know, the Cayman Islands, all these places, you know, they're sketchy little, you know, nothing places. I don't really have too much confidence. Canada, aside from being right next door to us, where you actually could theoretically drive up there, they have a long history of self-sufficiency and respect of metals. And see, people go, yeah, but they're just a puppet of America, and they'll do whatever America says. And that is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. It's every man for themselves. And if there was a crisis that bad, I really don't think that they'd be taking their orders from us. And again, they go, okay, well, what if it's really bad and the Canadians want to take it? And I go, any situation in the world which is bad enough that the Canadian government, not the U.S. government, the Canadian government not only wants to confiscate the metal of the people, but they want to find out about the tiny little amount that Miles Franklin has in this little security vault that has nothing to do with the banking system. I mean, and it is tiny. We're talking about immaterial to anything. If they were going to try to find that out and get it, it would show you we're probably in a world that's so bad with martial law and civil unrest and draconian governments and stuff that who cares? Your gold is going to be the last thing that you're worried about if it got to that point.
That's an excellent point. That perspective is important to keep in mind.
And remember, you talk about, if governments were going to confiscate, okay? And it's more appropriate to Americans because say, what if, because America once had a decree, even though they never actually took anything from anyone. But if they were going to do it in America, what would they do? They're not going to be looking for tiny little vaults. They'd certainly go to the Delaware Depository, which is a well-known vault holding huge amounts of IRAs of gold, which are, by the way, theoretically government-owned property, the IRAs, that they could take. And, of course, there's the GLD ETF, and there's the closed-end funds. I mean, that's what they'd go after. They're not going to be like, well, let's try to find a private security vault that has a couple of hundred ounces here and there. Yeah. I mean, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. They're going to go to door to door,
right?
People who have guns and try to get a couple of ounces, assuming they even have it, which they don't even have to report to you. It's ridiculous.
Excellent point. All right. Next question comes from a longtime site user, good friend, Infometron. Wants to know, these banks have this quarterly practice now. They're sitting on so much cash that at the end of every quarter, they do these reverse repos with the Fed and park it all at the Fed in exchange for some treasuries so that they show treasuries on their balance sheet at the end of the quarter instead of cash. Really, that number continues to get spiked even higher, it seems, every quarter. Denver Dave wrote about it when it happened, thought maybe it was indicative this last spike of greater stress in the system. I don't know if you have an opinion on this or not, but Infometron wants to know what you thought of that spike at the end of September.
Right. And I know what you're talking about. The thing is, I have to say that I'm not really an expert on these nuances of the money market. And again, you're talking about data with, do you really believe what they say? Do you believe what the Fed's numbers are? And if you did, what would it mean exactly? And, what other circumstances like derivatives they don't tell you about account for it? And how much of that month-end stuff is even relevant, especially when they can do, they can do whatever they want when it comes to these paper securities. And the fact that, is there stress in the system? I don't know. Look at Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank just eliminated dividend. They're the biggest bank in Europe. They're laying off 35,000 people. The head of the FDIC 2 years ago said they were so horribly undercapitalized. It's ridiculous. And every time you have any kind of major market move, which we had recently in things like interest rates, stocks, currencies, that all those derivatives underneath have some kind of issue. But is there stress that you can quantify and you can act on? I don't know.
Yeah.
They just made the Dow go up 2,800 points in the last month for absolutely no reason. There's been not a single positive thing going on. And the funny thing is that they've been saying, well, the stock market was down because of interest rate fears. They were worried that the Fed was going to raise interest rates. Well, they didn't raise now yesterday they come out and they said, well, maybe we'll raise interest rates and the stock market goes up. The point is, none of this stuff matters. It's all rigged. And if you mess with anything in those paper realms or trust anything in those paper realms, you are going to get your head handed to you, which is why the only things that I will own, the only things I have are my house and my physical gold and silver. And the little remaining cash I have, by the way, is in non-marginable brokerage accounts at non-banks like Schwab and Fidelity. That's the best I can do to stay away from the paper world.
Yep. Good advice. The next question comes from Euro Buddha, and I'm going to amend it and edit it to fit the other email question I had, which is Euro Buddha's question is, what's it going to take to rally these precious metals? And I'm going to add that into the other email question, which was, what will finally break the stranglehold that paper markets have on the physical market? Because that would then rally the precious metals. So I think the two fit together. So I guess we'll put it, just call it that. What do you think will finally, because that stranglehold is going to break at some point. I mean, you can't just lever up to 200-to-1, to 500-to-1, to 1,000-to-1, whatever. Eventually the music stops. What do you think it will take to break it?
It's the same answer that Gatta has been saying from minute one, from the day I started reading and writing for it back, 13 and a half years ago. It's the physical markets. Because they, as I said, they can do whatever they want with any paper market. You know, like when Bix Weir says, and I think he's saying it almost facetiously, he says they can place the price of silver at zero or a million with the click of a button. Now, obviously, they can't place it at zero because there wouldn't be a mining company around. But the concept of being able to move paper markets at will, and it couldn't be more obvious in the stock market, not just because of the enigmatic movements, but just look at the patterns. Look at what I call the dead ringer pattern, or in gold, the cartel herald. I mean, these are the same exact things happen every day, and it doesn't matter what the news is, because they can control anything paper related. And that's why, by the way, is going back to the mining shares, why I have been so vocally against mining shares for so long, because not only can they move them down at will just because they can, but because nothing, and I know this from having owned them for years, nothing inflames and excites people more than big movements up in gold mining stocks. They go flying into gold, they get excited. That's why they've been, that's why they've suppressed them so well, to the point where they, to answer the first part of your question, they've destroyed the mining industry. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind this year is peak gold and silver, maybe forever, certainly for the foreseeable future, and I mean a decade at least. And silver, it'll be even worse because half of the silver in the world is byproduct of silver, of copper, lead, and zinc mines, where the prices are collapsing, and they're going to collapse even more because there's way too much capacity and supply and a collapsing economy. So again, it's always about the physical market. And again, I mean, how many more silver shortages? We had massive silver shortages in 2008 and in 2011 and 2013 after that big smash in April. And here we almost ran out the whole industry this fall. I mean, that's four times in the last 6 years, and we haven't even, had a major crisis. Wait till the next real crisis comes. So, yeah, all they've done is they've destroyed the mining industry, so supply will go down. We have record demand. 2015 will easily be a record year for both gold and silver demand around the world. And then there's inventories. Now, whether you want to believe the inventories that are out there, like the COMEX, the fact is, right, there's no way that the CFTC and the CME would want you to believe that there's less inventory than there is. But, I mean, look. The gold inventory on the COMEX is down 90% since 2008. The silver is almost the same. I mean, on a dollar value, this is the lowest ever. The GLD has lost half of its inventory since 2008. And I assure you, since it's 400-ounce bars, the only people buying it are like central banks like the Chinese. So, what the little supply that's out there is almost gone right now. There's no production outlook to speak of. It's only going to go down. And we have record demand. And the more they print money, the more demand there'll be. I mean, look, just this week alone, forget the Fed. The Fed did nothing. They're still at zero interest rates. They haven't done anything tight, and they're not going to. The ECB said we're going to increase for the fourth time our QE program. Sweden increased their QE program. China did an unexpected rate cut. Who knows what the Bank of Japan will do tomorrow after we just learned that they have 50% of all the ETFs in Japan and they want more. It's a Ponzi scheme, which means the only way to keep it going is to keep printing more and more money, or otherwise it instantaneously collapses. Therefore, there will be more demand for gold and silver the world round. And again, most of that demand has been from a very small percentage of the world. And as more and more people fear the currency debauchery that's going on, more and more people will seek the safety of physical gold and silver.
Let me dovetail that into a question from Andreas. You've mentioned a couple times the last 3 months or so of business at Miles Franklin. We had all these stories, that all of a sudden there was a real hole in the supply chain. The mints couldn't get the blanks and the rounds are really hard to come by. And we never really, the paper price went down to $14. All we ever saw on the retail side was premiums expand. I mean, you still could never buy Eagles for anything less than $18 or $19. Is that the world we live in now going forward? What do you have to say? I mean, what, I guess Andrew's question is that a momentary supply issue that was behind all that, with ASC?
We have momentary supply issues all the time. The Sunshine Mint, which supplies these supposed blanks, the blank silver for the US Mint, they're working at three times the level that they were in 2008. Remember, the industry ran out of silver in 2008. Now demand is almost it's 2.5 times what it was then. That's just here in the States. You know, it's a lot more in India or China. No, and it never, you know, this is what they'll come out with their apologists saying, it's a supply issue. No, they're working 24/7. It's not the supply. The supply of actual silver is the problem. It's not the manufacturing mechanism. And, you know, I mean, everyone should Google, I did something called Physical Gold and Silver Market Update with interview with Andy Scheckman, our president, back in, I think it was in early August. You know, and even he said, I've been doing this 20-something years. Even in 2008, I've never seen something like this, where so many were so fearful of what's going on in the world. And, you know, premiums surge. Now, premiums got to their highest level since 2009, a few weeks ago. They've since started to creep back down, ironically, as the prices turned and started going up, because there's so many people, like myself, who every time they see these crazy smashes, they just come in and buy more. But everyone is so unnerved by exactly what we're seeing today. You know, and prices were $11.83 yesterday. It's $11.47 today. They just come in and smash it away because it got to 200-day moving average. And there's people like us who are savvy who just say, I'm just going to buy it on the lows. And, you know, but the real buying comes in when it finally gets the tailwind. And we even had a tailwind in 4 years. And, you know, when the dollar price of gold peaked in September 2011, because the cartel went all in, they were so fearful of what was going to go on. We had huge amounts of buying. And, you know, right now it's more the savvy buying rather than the general buying.
Well, and that's going to dovetail in the next question from Thoris, because we've talked a lot about, in the last couple of minutes, about the supply side of the equation and, you know, the wreckage of the mining industry, and the silver is a byproduct of things that don't need to be mined, you know, like zinc and lead and things like that, because there's such an oversupply. So if the supply side is only getting less, you imagine what happens with demand side. And so his question is basically what a lot of people deal with. You know, we're approaching the holidays. We're going to be sitting around a table and you know, everybody's brother-in-law is going to sit there and talk about how great their stock market, their S&P fund is doing. How do you deal with when you talk to your close friends and family about investing in precious metals? Because I can't imagine you keep your mouth shut. I would imagine you have an opinion, you know, sitting across from your brother-in-law at Thanksgiving. How do you talk about it? And if you do open eyes of families and friends, what was the thing that you think convinces them when you're having these discussions?
Right. Well, I have a couple of things to say about that. First of all, you're completely wrong if you think that I talk about this with people. And everyone should go. I talk about them only the people in my world. I wrote an article probably 3 or 4 years ago. You can Google it. I think it's called Family, Friends, and Colleagues. If you Google it, you'd have to write Family, Friends, and Colleagues, Miles Franklin, because it's a popular term.
Okay.
And I said, look, I long ago realized that the only people that, you know, don't try to talk to people who don't want to see, you know, or don't want to hear. And that includes the vast majority of people, which would mean the vast majority of people you know, which would mean most of your family and friends and colleagues, except mine because I work at Miles Franklin. So I no longer talk to anyone. I mean, there were years way back where I talked to people about what I thought about gold and buy a mining stock. I don't talk to anyone right now about these things because there's nothing you can do to convince them. And, you know, I mean, when it comes down to it, there's only enough gold and silver out there for 1 or 2% of the world to be protected. So when the S hits the fan, there's only going to be so much gold and silver anyway. It's not like you can protect anyone. And, you know, there's nothing you could say to people who don't want to hear is the answer. I think you would ask what will turn it. You know, look, the demand is at a record level. It's only going to go up with money printing. That's a guaranteed correlation. And money printing has to go up. And the supply side has to go down. I mean, this is what happens. It's the complete opposite. But, you know, put it this way. I wrote an article earlier this year called The Direst Prediction of All. It was January 2nd, my first article of the year. And I basically, you know, I took David Stockman's great deformation views to heart. Because basically he's saying that because all of the money printing, all that extra cheap funding that was out there and the financial engineering on Wall Street has created the most massive edifice of oversupply in history, whether you're talking about oil, all these shale producers that were funded with cheap junk bonds and all that stuff, and infrastructure, the Chinese government builds gold ghost cities and all these crazy things and all these crazy businesses out there, the venture capital funds investing in Snapchat and stuff like that. All that oversupply. But the complete opposite, the polar opposite, I wrote about it in Supply Response, is gold and silver, because they've had the opposite. They've had their price suppressed. They've had capital kept from them for all these years and decades. And that's why the industry is in a shambles. And you're going to see it. Wait till you see it at the year end. If prices are anywhere near here, the write-offs are going to be horrible. The balance sheets are going to fall apart. Everyone's going to be closing mines. And if copper and lead and zinc prices continue to stay down here or get worse, it's going to be carnage. I mean, look what's happening at Glencore, right? Glencore and Trafigura, who don't know about. These are huge, huge owners of paper contracts, and they mine zinc and copper. And they're going to shut all those mines down, and they're going to shut down production of silver, and it's going to collapse. So, again, we have the perfect storm of physical supply and demand going on. But as for the paper, I mean, I don't really care. I don't even know when gold and silver do break out. I don't even know if the physical gold and silver and the paper will both break out or if it'll just be the physical. I really have no idea.
Yeah, that's kind of an academic discussion. You know, all we can do is look back at history and see how the exchange or exchanges have treated breakdowns like that, whether they just cash settle something and shut down. Again, that's kind of a theoretical discussion that, you know, for another day. But you're being extraordinarily generous with your time, my friend. If you can believe it, we've been at this already for 40 minutes. And it's been tremendously informative, and I know we could keep going on and on, but I better keep on moving because I know your time is important as well. I've got just a couple of questions left. Russell would like just simply to double back real quick and explain again in English why it is, other than the fact that it's frankly fascism and corporatism, statism, whatever you want to call it, to have the central bank of your country buying equities, directly investing in all these different companies and picking winners. Other than that, why can't this stock buying scheme of the central banks go on forever? Can you maybe explain that to people, why eventually that isn't going to work?
Well, it can work. Work with quotes. Look at, can anyone guess what the best performing stock market in the world has been this year? Take a wild guess, Craig.
Japan?
No. Japan can barely go higher with all the buying because it's
so oversaturated.
I have no
idea. The Venezuelan stock market?
Absolutely. Ding, ding, ding. It's Venezuela. They are hyperinflating. They are a modern version of hyperinflation unfolding right in front of us. And that is the best performing stock market in the world right now, just as the Zimbabwe market was 10 or 15 years ago and the Weimar Germany market was. But only in nominal terms, because the people, first of all, the people in Venezuela don't own stocks. They're all dead broke. And the people who own, the people who do own stocks are losing those gains in real terms to inflation. So yeah, that's what I mean by they can move the price anywhere they want. They could move the price of the Dow to 50,000, 100,000. But if they do, it won't be because of real returns. It won't be because of economic growth. It'll be simply due to monetization. And I assure you, if the Dow does hit 50,000, the price of gold will not be down here at $1,100. There will be some major, major Venezuelan-type worries and problems going on in this country if the Dow hits 50,000.
Well, and that's an excellent point. And that is probably the most apt comparison. You're absolutely right, is to look at other attempts where this has been. What do you think, Andy, about the dollar reserve currency status and the movement, you know, by all of these creditor nations, if you will, to align themselves in what appears to be a setup of what will be the, you know, a competing or the next global reserve system. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I got thoughts on everything.
Yeah, well, I know you do. That's what's so much fun.
Put it this way, you know, to me, this border is more on the conspiracy theory side than anything. I mean, yes, but theoretically, yes, I know there's a BRICS bank and all this stuff, and China's got their own what do you call it, that SWIFT system, all that stuff, and they want to usurp the dollar, and then the petrodollar is going to go down and all this stuff. First of all, there's no such thing as a petrodollar. I mean, people use dollars to buy everything. Oil is just one of many things. It's not like oil is anything special, and they'll continue to do that, and they'll also buy oil with rubles and other stuff too. It really doesn't really matter, but right now, since there are more dollars out there in reserves and, you know, there's more transactions, people need it more. But the fact is there are a lot of countries that are trying to depend on other currencies. But all those currencies stink. I mean, there's nothing better. The best one is, you know, and I wrote Death of the BRICS. Actually, I've written several things called Death of the BRICS. But recently, I wrote about how Goldman Sachs 10 years ago said the BRICS nations would lead the global economy for the next 100 years. Well, has anyone looked at how the BRICS are doing? Four of them, yeah. You know, Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa, all four of their currencies are at all-time lows right now. All four of them are in so severe, severe economic depressions. And all four of them are completely dependent on the commodities market or the Chinese economy for any semblance of hope. And, of course, the Chinese bubble is collapsing worse than all of them. And the only reason their currency is not at all-time low is because it's still pegged to the dollar, which it will not be for long. Eventually, they'll have to depeg it like all the other ones. So I'm not too confident that there's anyone out there that's going to replace the dollar. I think the problem is not the dollar. The problem is the system. It's a cancerous fiat currency system that is anchored by the dollar, but everyone is anchored to nothing. And the problem is that more and more people are losing confidence in that system as they lose purchasing power. So in time, you know, first they're going to run to the safety of things that preserve value, like gold and silver, as they have been. There's been record demand. And in time, there will be new currency systems that are more practical than a gold standard. But they're not going to be something like this, where the central bank just prints money and you're supposed to trust government. Trust the government after all the things that they say and do. No one will ever trust them again.
Excellent point. All right, two last questions in queue, and they're pretty quick ones. Thoris comes back, wants to know, what is there a majority of a certain type of precious metal or form that you own? I mean, do you mainly own eagles, maples, rounds, bigger bars? I mean, what's your preference?
Well, look, I mean, it's hard to say you'll go wrong with anything, but you know, what we recommend and what I personally do, what I was personally doing before I even joined Miles Franklin is, you know, your best pound for pound, you know, hit gain is going to be with 1 ounce rounds. You know, it's the best mix of liquidity that you're going to get. I mean, if you get fractionals, you pay big premiums. There's not really that much gain to get for them. If you buy big bars, you pay a little less, but they have a lot less liquidity. People don't really want them. They're not as portable. So frankly, I think, you know, you need, everyone must own some junk silver. That is, if you can find some, because it's gotten very scarce lately. And the rest of what I have is 1 ounce rounds. Now, in gold, there's not many choices. You know, aside from the major mints, there's not really much out there. So, you know, I have maples and, you know, eagles and buffaloes. And in silver, you have a little more choice. I mean, we certainly would recommend that the core of your portfolio is liquid, well-known names, like eagles and maples and Philharmonics. But there's also, you know, if you know what you're doing, I mean, there's buffaloes and there's some other generics that are well-known that trade at lower levels, and you mix and match as long as you don't be stupid about, you know, or as Andy Shechtman would say, don't be dollar penny-wise and pound-foolish. Because if you're like, well, I'm going to just buy 1,000-ounce bars because they're a little cheaper, well, you're going to be stuck with 1,000-ounce bars. And trust me, no one wants 1,000-ounce bars.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, last question. You mentioned right when we got started that TF Metals report was one that you like to visit and that you trust and read. Eurobrew just wants to know if a handful of other sites that you like. What other sites do you visit on a daily basis?
Oh, well, I mean, Zero Hedge, without them, I couldn't do my job because they're the only, you know, quote, news media that actually reports real things that matter. So that's a necessity for me. You know, I think David Stockman's Contra Corner is great. I think David Stockman's become even if he's not really so much into the manipulation of markets, when it comes to the understanding of economics, I don't think there's anyone who's better out there. And, you know, but there's really not much else that I could say I'm dying to see. There's just not really a lot of good writers out there, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And, no, I hear you, though. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't have my site if it weren't for Zero Hedge, but gosh, there's no other site out there that offers what's actually going on, you know, that's really worth going to. I mean, there are a number of precious metals writers that I make sure I stop by and that kind of thing, but I hear you about Zero Hedge.
Yeah, I mean, like Steve St. Angelo, SRS Rocco Report, and then there's Koos Jansen does some stuff, and, you know, and then Bill Holter does some stuff. I mean, you go around, you're going to find some people who write some smart stuff, but, you know, if you're saying, what would I not live without, it's Zero Hedge is the only one that I can't live without. Everything else I can find in bits and pieces.
I agree. All right, my friend, time to wrap up. I got to hit you though with the Final Four on the way out the door. Remember how this works? Just four quick questions, kind of can answer usually in a word or a sentence. You know, just kind of fun thing as we wrap up. If you're ready, can I hit them with you?
Or hit, yeah, let's go. Them?
All right, my friend, we talked a lot about gold and silver. Do you own any platinum?
I have 1 ounce. I'm not a huge fan of platinum. I mean, I'd rather own it than just about anything else in a time of crisis. But as you can see, the way it's performing now, you know, it's debatable whether people are going to consider it monetary or not.
Right. I look at it, you know, it's almost like the gold-silver ratio in a sense. You know, to see platinum down below the price of gold has me kind of scratching my head a little bit, but I hear you. Second, I think most folks know you relocated years ago to Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Have you planned your first ski trip yet? It's almost November.
No, not yet. In fact, I think they just delayed the openings over here because we just got our first snow, but I think in the next in the next 2 weeks, everything's going to start opening. I'm going to take my soon-to-be 4-year-old. I'm going to take her for the first time this year.
Oh, dude, that'll be awesome!
Yeah.
How much fun will that be? All right. Given that geographically, were you at that debate last night? Were you in the crowd with CNBC?
Yeah. What do you call it? The debate?
Yeah.
No, I stayed as far away from that as I could.
I don't blame you, man. Oh, what a joke. All right. And finally, put yourself in Mother Felon's pantsuit, if you will. And what do you think comes first? Will there be some kind of phony baloney, jawboning, you know, 12 basis point rate hike in December, just to show that's the only one we're going to do, just that? Or will they just completely just continue to jawbone and eventually have to do more QE instead? What comes first, a little rate hike or more QE?
Well, as I said, the only thing that matters to them, only thing I've said all along, is the stock market, which they manipulate. If they are unsuccessful in manipulating it, as they were this summer when it was falling, then they start saying, oh, well, we're worried about China, we're worried about everything. But now that they've gotten, you know, they were able to, and I say they, it's 100% the PPT. There's no other reason for the stock market going up 2,000, 2,500 points. And so now that they've got it up 2,500 points, they feel there's a cushion, they feel like they can go back to the jawboning. It's always about pretending that they have the ability to do so, yeah, while they keep in the language that they're data dependent. Now, the odds of them, first of all, as I've said, the only thing more cataclysmic than a significant yuan devaluation would be an interest rate increase by the Fed. It will have catastrophic ramifications. This is nothing to sneeze at, even if it was a 12 basis point hike. So I think people need to realize that even if they thought, the stock market's up, we can just do this just to say we can do it, there'll be massive ramifications. The dollar would surge on stuff like that, and commodities would crash, and stock markets, I mean, all the things that are tied to the expectation of zero interest rates would take a hit. So that would be a pretty dangerous thing to do. And the concept of doing it a week before Christmas and 2 weeks before the year-end bonus, when Wall Street, you know, needs their Santa Claus rally to pay, it's impossible. There's just no way. And of course, they're data dependent. Well, the data is getting worse. So, right, you know, it's not like all of a sudden they're going to have these magically great numbers come out between now and December 19th. So I would say that it's all smoke and mirrors, and the negatives, the cons of even attempting something as stupid, let alone with a 12, 25 basis point, are so huge compared to the incredibly nominal gains. And again, we're in a currency war here. It's not like the Bank of Japan and the Euro ECB are raising rates and they have to compete to protect the currency. We're talking about every single one of those is lowering rates and expanding QE as we speak. So there's no pressure on them. In fact, the pressure is to do more QE, because the White House has said we're worried about the higher dollar, so has corporate America, so is everybody. So there's no incentive. And, of course, the last thing I'll say about it is, Craig, here's a question for you. Who has more – which entity on the planet has more individual leverage, aside from the federal government of the U.S., to higher interest rates? Who would that be?
Which
entity? The Federal Reserve itself.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve with its $4.5 trillion portfolio of long duration – overvalued toxic mortgage and treasury bonds. So they'd be hurting themselves more than anyone on a pound for pound basis. So no, I don't think they'll be raising interest rates.
More QE and NERP even on the horizon, all beneficial for again, another reason on gold and silver. Andy, you've been just tremendous guest, and I think folks will be downloading this, sending it to friends, listening to it over and over the weekend. We love Miles Franklin, love what you do there, love the company. Tell everybody again where your work can be found and how they can get in touch with Miles Franklin so they can buy their gold and silver there.
Right. We've been around 26 years, A-plus Better Business Bureau rating. You can call us 800-822-8080. Every day I do free blog, podcasts, all that kind of stuff. Just go to milesfranklin.com. And, of course, you can email me at ahoffman@milesfranklin.com.
Andy, great stuff, my friend. It's going to be a very interesting remainder of the year, and we'll have to get back together either late this year, early next, and just kind of see how everything's going. Thank you so much for your time. It's just been tremendous.
You're very, very welcome.
And I wish you a great rest of your day, and hopefully keep your sanity as we watch what happens these next couple of days with our metals.
Yeah. Yep. Same here. Thanks.
All right, my friend. Take care.